Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
That's right. You are Locked On Broncos. It's time to drop some knowledge. Hey, chin up, Broncos country. Things are going to be okay. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com, and with me is my co-host Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach and NFL draft analyst, among many other things. Luke, my friend, we're still sifting through the wreckage, but how are you today?
You know, there's a light somewhere on the other side of this tunnel. There's a little, like a couple just faint beams of it poking through. Hopefully today we can kind of dig through and find the rest of it.
That's right, and we are committed to bringing you a daily podcast focused entirely on the Denver Broncos, at least 5 days a week. We're not here to just report the news. We're here to do a deep dive on your favorite team, the Denver Broncos. So do us a solid. Be sure to share the episodes on Twitter, share them on Facebook, Reddit, and follow the show on Twitter, at Locked On Broncos. We really need each listener to take a quick second, find the at Locked On Broncos username, click the follow button. As Luke said on Monday, you know, turn that thing blue. Just follow. Very important to us growing the show. We had to recently start the account from scratch, so do us a solid, follow us on Twitter. Of course, the home of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom, but make sure to subscribe on iTunes as well. And if you're an Android user, Stitcher is a phenomenal, phenomenal podcast listening app. Subscribe there as well. You know, there's one game left on the docket, and we're going to be dissecting that down the, you know, through as we get through this week. But with one game left and then a whole offseason of questions and trying to figure out where the team goes from here, you're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, Luke, let me just say thanks, my friend, for holding down the fort for me on Monday. You know, with all the Christmas happenings and being a father of four, sometimes it's hard to budget the time for football or to cover the Broncos. It gets really tricky, especially when you have a game like that on Christmas. You got the family parties, you got this and that. I was absent. Luke, you did a great job solo style, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate that, but it's more than good to have you back. Thanks for letting me run the show for a day.
It's good to be back. And man, I am ready to exercise the demons and get this game and frankly this season out of my system. For the first time since the Josh McDaniels era, the Denver Broncos will not be in the playoff tournament after falling to the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday, 33-10. Now, honestly, Luke, when the Chiefs drove down and put 7 points on the board right out of the gates on that opening possession, I just knew the Broncos were going to be in for a long night. I mean, you never give up hope when you're watching a team in any kind of sport, but that just kind of was a bad harbinger. You know, the Broncos came out flat, and the defense, who usually holds down the fort and carries the offense even by their bootstraps through these games, finally snapped. You know, the dam broke, and the disappointment, I guess, of the 2016 season came pouring out. And before we talk about the Broncos being flat amongst you and me here, let's really quick, I wanted to play a clip from Gary Kubiak on the issue, who addressed us on Monday.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know about that word. I mean, obviously we played poorly. You know, we gave up 380-yard-plus touchdown drives, I think, in the first four times he touched the ball. So, I mean, that's not like us. You know, we had ourselves in position 21-10 before the half, you know, made a decision to try the fake field goal, obviously. But I think we kept battling. We just didn't play good enough as a team to win. I mean, heck, that's a poor we played defensively, and we've been really pretty consistent defensively. Offensively, not making the most out of possessions. Like I said, two possessions in the second half, and there's 7 minutes left in the game. So, and turn the ball over on special teams. So, I mean, we just – it was a group effort. It was not good enough as a group, coaches or players.
Now, Luke, as Coop points out there, you know, there were a lot of factors, obviously, that led to the loss. You can go through – we can go through, you know, dissect each and every one. But I don't think there's any question that the Broncos came out flat. You know, personally, I think that this is a team who mailed in the season when they lost to the New England Patriots the week before.
Well, and last season, the mantra of this team really was kicking and screaming. For better or for worse, it's what the coaching staff preached. Now, there are moments throughout the season when it was more just screaming and running than kicking. But, you know, for the most part, they held to that kicking and screaming, and it carried them to the Super Bowl. There was no kicking. There was no screaming. And there was a whole lot of flat play yesterday. I mean, we are seeing guys run themselves out of plays. I mean, Bradley Roby just kind of jogs off to the sideline trying to make a tackle, you know.
Yep.
Players not flowing to the ball. This is not the physical defense that we saw, and that carries over on the offense, who, let's be real, have been flat most of the season. They've lacked a spark game in, game out, week in, week out. And Kubiak says, you know, that they kept battling. They didn't battle at all in the first half. They showed a little bit of a spark in the early second half, but it was too little and much too late.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You talk about last year being kicking and screaming. I mean, this year it was kicking and whimpering, I guess. I mean, you were watching that game. You're right. There were several times I commented to people around me. I was watching this game from a family party, talking about, you know, look at these guys jogging to the football. Look at these guys jogging behind a player in pursuit. There was no intensity. Physicality was lacking. They just came out flat. And, you know, you look at this game against the Chiefs, and this particular issue, it might not really count because it never really was a close game, but this is something you and I have discussed before, Luke. One of the big differences, you know, you talk about kicking and screaming in the 2015 Broncos and their 2016 counterparts, was how the ball broke, as it were. Last year, it seemed like any time there was a turn of fortune late in games, it typically would favor the Broncos, and they rode that momentum all the way to their third Lombardi Trophy. But this time around, of course, as Gary Kubiak pointed out, the cookie crumbled in a different way.
Well, and you can call that Tebow syndrome if you want, but you know, there's a certain point at which games just break a different way for certain teams in certain years. It seems like they get all the luck, right? I mean, we're seeing that kind of this year with the Detroit Lions, who've had come from behind win after come from behind win, and you know, so many game winning drives. You know, is it luck? Is it happenstance? Is it just pure fortune? Who knows? But this season, the breaks were not going Denver's way. And there have been times in the past where the defense has bailed the offense out. But this season, the defense has had to carry the offense, not just bail them out. They've had to carry the offense because the offense has been so flat. And that's really the one theme that I think I can take away really from this Sure. season.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing, too, with you know, talking about tough breaks and twists of fate and such. On that topic, on Monday, Kubiak hit on something that I think continues to be lost on many people who cover the Broncos. How important it is, especially for a team built like the Broncos, to score first, because it puts the onus on the opposition. It plays right into the hands of Wade Phillips and that defense, and it's likely one of the reasons the ball didn't break Denver's way this year. And Luke, I want to get your take on it, but real quick, let's hear what Kubiak had to say on that issue.
Oh, yeah, Mike. I mean, that's a fact. If you last long enough, you know, you go back and look at those great years when things worked out for you and you think about how the ball bounced for you to get there, you know. And last year we played in a lot of really close football games. But the thing we did last year, we were able to get leads in games, you know, and people had to play different against us. They had to throw the ball. You know, you go back to the playoffs, we scored first in all three of those playoff games, first possession, all three of those playoff games. So, we haven't gotten anybody in that position here in the last month. So I think that's been a big difference. Even though we've been in some close games, we haven't been able to get somebody to play from behind and let our guys go rush a passer, which is kind of what we do best, you know. So it's been tough.
All right, Luke. So you're a football coach. I mean, how important is it in games, especially for a team like Denver, who plays the cards so close to the vest, to be the one who scores first in a game?
Yeah, well, there are two kind of trains of thought to getting the ball first. The first being, you know, if you get the ball first offensively, you're going to say, all right, we're going to go out there and we're going to put some points on the board and we're going to tell, you know, this other team exactly who they're going to have to deal with when their offense walks out on their first drive and the score is you know, 7-0, that they know that they're in for a game. And the other train of thought is, all right, we're going to have our defense go out there, set the tone for us on that first drive, and we're going to get the extra possession to close the first half and start the second. Now, you know, that's kind of a big way to look at things. And if your offense can't go out and get those points, if you go 3-and-out punt, and then, you know, the team ends up with the ball around the 30-40 yard line.
Yeah.
Then it's a short field, and then you're behind on the scoreboard, and then your defense has never had a chance to establish themselves physically.
Yeah, and it's interesting when Kubiak brought that up, being reminded that in those three playoff games, you know, last year, as woeful as the offense was at times, I mean, again, they did get their running game at least being efficient down the stretch and into the postseason, but they had the benefit of scoring first, which puts the pressure on the opposition and really can change the shape of a game and how you know, the opposition will game plan and play you throughout the rest of the game. Now, when you look at the Broncos season, you know, there are, I think, a myriad of reasons why this train went, you know, careening off the track like Ozzy Osbourne's crazy train. In fact, I wrote a piece, produced a video on milehighhuddle.com about this on Monday. Go check that out. The thing I landed on, though, was key injuries. Now, not making excuses, but losing Vance Walker, the guy that the front office and the coaching staff tapped to replace Malik Jackson to keep the trench domination flowing, tears his ACL in camp, puts the onus on three basically rotational caliber players in Jared Crick, Adam Gotsis, and Billy Winn to stop the gap. I mean, that hurt. The Broncos exited week 16 ranked 29th in rushing defense, and that's what one of the big reasons for that. But I think from an injury standpoint, Luke, what really hurt the Broncos was losing CJ Anderson. His leadership, his experience, you know, his ability to create when things aren't blocked perfectly, that absolutely set the Broncos offense back. And I don't think they ever recovered. Then they go and lose Andy Janovich, put him on IR, forces the Broncos to go away from the two-back set, taking Kubiak out of his comfort zone, and then arguably your hottest running back at the time, Capri Bibbs, goes down. I mean, Luke, the Broncos were absolutely decimated in the backfield this year. Injuries played a role.
Injuries did play a role, and they played a role at that very position to start the year. And really, we didn't really kind of see injuries elsewhere except for the defensive line. I mean, this was a team that has been all year healthy on the offensive line. I mean, no players on the offensive line have missed a game due to injury that I can think of. Which is
no,
good
other,
considering
other than Paradis battling those hips.
Yeah,
I can't think of one either.
But no missed games, and to have all five players, you know, to have five guys starting all 15, and I'm of course counting one rotating door at right tackle. You know, you've had all five guys out there all season. And that's huge. So you have continuity up front. You have continuity at wide receiver. You have continuity in the secondary, really, until now. You know, Aqib Talib obviously goes down for four games. But across the board at so many positions, you had guys who were healthy. And what it really came down to was those season-ending injuries at those key spots with running back and defensive line. I mean, I pointed it out earlier this year. The Chargers have probably, like, 18 guys on IR right now.
For the second year in a row.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is a team that stays healthy, but even those little things just add up and the coaches can't adjust. I mean, Vance Walker went down in training camp. Malik Jackson left in free agency.
Yep.
You've had all offseason to adjust for this as a coaching staff, and they couldn't get it done.
Well, and Coach Kubiak, you know, he talked about this on Monday. He was asked what he felt like the turning point to the Broncos season was. Here's what he had to say real quick.
I don't know about turn. I think I made a point last night after the game. I think we had an opportunity in week 11 for our confidence to really take off, you know. And I'm not saying it went the other way, but we come out of that game. We lost Trevor for a week, I think the next week, right? He didn't play. We lost him. We lost. We did some good stuff when Andy was part of our team. We kind of had some things we were doing better, and then all of a sudden we lose Capri. And, you know, so we got some things going on to me that all of a sudden we started playing a little differently, not playing well, and, you know, it just hurt us. You know, we were still playing good enough defensively to maintain and hang in there
and you know, you get out of Tennessee with the win or something like that, you know, it can still propel you. So just it's been disappointing since then, but we were in pretty good shape at one time, but that's this league. You know, it's a marathon and not a sprint. I know we've all heard that one before, and over the long haul, we just haven't been good enough.
I think he's absolutely right, Luke. And you know, obviously as the head coach, he knows his team better than anyone. Week 12's overtime loss to the Chiefs in Denver, I think, was a major turning point to this season. And not just because the Broncos lost, but how they lost that game. Trevor Siemian carves the Chiefs defense up, gives Wade Phillips exactly what they wanted on defense, an 8-point lead with 3 minutes to go. That's a scenario in which the Broncos defense thrives 9 times out of 10. And then Alex Smith drives down and ties the game, sends it to overtime where a long Brandon McManus field goal goes awry, leading to a Chiefs win. But who knows? I mean, like Coop says there, if the Broncos find a way to win in Tennessee, perhaps that could have propelled them and served as a catalyst going into, you know, to take them onto a win streak.
You know, it's always one little thing that you can come back to across the season. You can say that the loss to New England is the turning point, and that pretty much kicks them out of the playoffs. You know, does the loss of Kansas City kick them out of the playoffs? It really is, to me. You know, this team has never, to my mind, at least this season, not since the midpoint of the season, been in a positive mindset. It's always been they're looking over their shoulder at the other teams in the wild card race. I mean, there was no, okay, we're going to go in and we're going to knock off Kansas City and Oakland and take the lead in the division. They were just trying to stay alive in the wild card race.
Right.
A mindset does play into it, because when you start talking yourself, you know, all right, you know, if we can, you know, in high school, you'll play out of league and then in league, and you'll say, all right, if we can just survive until league play when the games actually matter. No, you got to win every game. You know, there's no such thing as a game that doesn't matter in such a short schedule. You got to go out there and you got to win every game. And the fact that they dropped some key ones in the middle of the year, that just caused that skid right there, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it kind of, you know, they started 7-3. I mean, think about that. This team through 10 games was 7-3, and now they're out of the playoffs. And
they were 5-0, right?
Well, 4-0. They lost 4-0, the fifth one to Atlanta.
Right. You're right.
But
yeah.
It reminds me, Luke, of two seasons. It reminds me of 2006 when the Broncos, I think, got out to a 7-5 start. They were actually leading the AFC West, made the fateful decision, Mike Shanahan did, to bench Jake Plummer for Jay Cutler. And then the Broncos, of course, go on to miss the playoffs. And then, of course, you have Shanahan's final season in Denver, where they had the final last three games. They had a shot at the playoffs, blew that. And then even McDaniel's first season in Denver, starting 6-0, missing the playoffs. And it's just something, I think, that happens to every team from time to time, Luke, but certainly something that the Broncos are no strangers to.
Well, and it's kind of funny, too, because a lot of people are going to say, oh, you know, a play or a quarter or a game is a microcosm of a season. The Broncos historically have been very fast starters to the season. And yet we see in game they get off to the slowest start to a game. It is actually quite amusing to me that there's such a dichotomy between those two instances.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about Andy Reid, because, you know, the whole thing about Andy Reid keeping his foot to the pedal late in the game, you know, not only trying to put another touchdown on the board, but going deep into his gadget playbook to unearth that Dontari Poe jump pass. Now, personally, that didn't bother me, although I do understand why it bothered many in Broncos country and, frankly, many Broncos players. And I want to break it down with you, Luke, but first, let's hear Kubiak's take on it real quick. I think it's important for you to understand how Kubiak felt about that and why he called that timeout with 8 seconds left in the game.
Oh, absolutely not, Mike. You guys know me better than that. I actually called Trevor over. I wanted to run another play. I'm sitting there watching a kid like Henry catch a ball for the first time in the NFL, you know, and I'm thinking, give this kid another chance to make a play. I feel bad putting Trevor in position. He throws an interception. I don't want him in the game that way, but no, and I don't think that way. I mean, Andy does a great job of coaching his team. He's a great coach. He's a good friend. It's our job to stop people, you know, so I don't think of things that way. I respect his team and what he does.
Now, clearly, Kubiak has mad respect for Andy Reid. But what say you, Luke? I mean, I know, of course, you know, you admired the play. You spoke to that on Monday. But was that an unnecessary shot across the bow?
the Don Terry Poe thing in a form of poor sportsmanship.
You know what? I don't think it was poor sportsmanship. I think at that point of the game, you're going to get guys who were less involved in the game plan into the game. I mean, that's why we saw so many backups in for both teams on that final drive for Denver. And I saw so many people questioning, oh, you know, wouldn't you save a trick play like that, you know, for the playoffs when you need it?
Right.
Look. First of all, so many of these plays are just completely situationally based. I mean, I don't know if you saw the touchdown in college football this year that was the pass to the Pittsburgh offensive lineman, the big dude out of Pitt whose name escapes me. But offensive lineman lines up as eligible, catches a touchdown, and rumbles in for like 20 yards and a score. He kind of spoke on the record about this. Basically, that play required them, I think the ball needed to be on the left hash between 20 and 25 yards out, and there was like a down scenario. Otherwise, that play doesn't get called.
Right. All the stars had to align.
Exactly. And, no matter what your take is on Alex Smith, are you honestly going to say that, you know, down 27-24 with a minute left and a timeout on the goal line against New England, you're going to send Don Terry Poe out instead of Alex Smith? In the playoffs?
Right, yeah.
No way. No way. No matter what you think about Alex Smith, you're not sending a nose tackle out there. You know, this is – I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And if you don't like it, go out and stop it. That wasn't a complex play. He threw a 360-pound dude out there to throw a jump pass.
That's a good point.
I mean,
it really
come
wasn't.
On, man.
I mean – it is what it is. And as Kubiak said, and you said, you know, it's your job to stop it. Broncos didn't stop it.
I mean, there's no such thing as a mercy rule in the NFL. You'll get running clocked in high school, not in the NFL. These are guys getting paid to stop nose tackles from throwing jump passes, man.
You know, it reminds me of the sentiment anyway, not what actually happened, but that play or that game, Broncos-Chiefs, I think it was 09, might have been the final year, McDaniels 2010, when the Broncos just put the smackdown on the Chiefs. What was his name? Todd, the coordinator in Pittsburgh right now.
Todd Haley,
the midfield handshake, and he points his finger at McDaniels and gives him a little talking down and all that. You know, that's not what this was. It was a hard-fought game, and, you know, Chiefs wanted to put another score on. They were in position. There was plenty of time, and that's what happened. Excuse me. And that's that. And I want to talk about what to expect in Week 17, the quarterback situation. But before we do, let's talk about SeatGeek, because we're heading into Week 17. The postseason hopes, those are in the books, but you still have one last chance to watch the Broncos play in a game that does have some meaning against the Oakland Raiders. SeatGeek is the easiest way to find tickets for that game. There's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest games of the year, and although this might not be a big game in that respect for the Broncos, hey, it's an opportunity to see them play, to see your Aqib Talib and Von Millers and Trevor Siemians and everybody. It's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for great value with SeatGeek. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, as does Luke. It's by far the easiest way we've found to buy tickets because, you know, I can be anywhere and with just a few taps, instantly find the seats for this weekend, any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because they go out and price compare for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek makes sure that you're always going to get the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, which is why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats. You can find the best deals that are going to fit your budget, especially coming out of Christmas. Plus, every ticket that you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And best of all, Locked On Broncos listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you do that. First, download the SeatGeek app. Second, go to the Settings tab, click Add a Promo Code. Third, enter promo code LO Broncos. And then SeatGeek will send you 20 American dollars after you've made your first purchase. So download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LO Broncos today. All right, now, Luke, Gary Kubiak was, I want to keep talking about some of the things Kubiak shed light on Monday because a lot of it was actually pretty illuminating, just to kind of see where he's at in his mindset, his take on how things went down, why they went down the way they did. Kubiak was asked about on Sunday night and, of course, on Monday in Denver, and it's on the minds of many in Broncos country. Is he going to start Paxton Lynch in Week 17 against the Oakland Raiders? Now, this game might be meaningless from a playoff perspective for the Broncos, but it's still an opportunity to mine some value out of what is now a failed season. The Broncos have a chance to get some valuable snaps out of some of their young players whom they hope to have kind of a better beat on evaluation-wise heading into 2017 offseason. The top guy that fits that formula, of course, is Paxton Lynch. And anyone who's listened to this show or the previous podcast Luke and I did, Huddle Up, knows that I've been of the opinion from day one that they should have rolled with Paxton Lynch to start the season, because the margin between he and Simeon, at least at that point, was so small. And it's a topic we have dissected many times, frankly, and I don't necessarily mean to go down that path again. But the bottom line is the coaches chose Simeon because they thought he gave the Broncos the best chance to win and get back to the playoffs. And it didn't work, and it's not all Simeon's fault, of course, but all the live bullets that will serve to refine, you know, kind of a young player's game could have been used on Lynch and could have propelled him into 2017 with a better skill set, Luke, knowledge and experience. Now, however, it's a moot point. What's done is done. And looking at Week 17, there is still meaning in Denver's matchup because they could ruin Oakland's shot at winning the division and getting a first-round bye. Here's what Kubiak had to say about it real quick, and then, Luke, I want to get your take on it.
No, what I said after the game was that, I told the players I wanted them on the plane ride home to clear their head. And that next week, we look at next week as, you know, moving on in the future. We can't do nothing about this season. So that's what I told them, and I think that's what I told you guys. As far as playing, I'd like to sit here and say we'll play everybody. I'll make a decision on Paxton. You know, we'll see. We got home at 3:30 in the morning, so I haven't made any decisions today. So I'll make those the next couple of days. There's no drawbacks to anything. I mean, I think what I have to do is sit down here, see where we're at as a team, and, get some good direction, and that direction is going to come from some of the health that's going on with this football team. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. I just don't want to sit here and try to – I'm not trying to talk that one way or another today. It's been a quick, short night, so – I'll address that.
So there it is, Luke. Kubiak hasn't decided yet, but in your mind, is there any reason not to go with Paxton Lynch this week against the Oakland Raiders?
To me, at least, there is no reason. I mean, at this point, you have nothing left to play for. You have no shot at getting into the playoffs. You know, why not put in your younger guys, see what they can do? If I was a coach, this is the game where I start Lynch, where I start guys like James Ferentz, Connor McGovern, Billy Turner. I get the young guys out on the field, so I know what I have in them. Start turning some of those unknown quantities into known quantities. You know, any guy who's injured, just put him on IR. And I know this is drastic, and I know that this is unlikely to really happen from any NFL coach, but, you know, promote the young guys from the practice squad. Let them get a shot. Let them prove what they're worth, because it's going to be a long offseason until training camp. Some of these guys aren't going to be here. Let them get a shot. And if you're going to be serious about calling a timeout with 8 seconds left because you want to, you know, a guy who's just caught his first NFL pass to go out there and catch a second, start him. Start Henry Krieger Coble. Let him catch 8. You know, let the young guys get a shot. Let them try and prove what they're worth. You know, ultimately, it's not going to happen. We're going to see the same veterans trotted out there. But I would love to see the young guys get a shot, man. Starts with Lynch.
I agree, as would I. And I think that's what you're going to see. Paxton Lynch is probably going to get the nod against the Raiders. And real quick, before we go on, I want to talk about something. You know, one of the benefits we have at Locked On Podcast Network is the opportunity to work closely with our advertising partners. And we enjoy taking the time on the show to talk about these partners, help them to reach new people, because these are companies that we believe in. And it's a powerful thing. It's not something that we take lightly. And it also allows us to keep this content free for you, our listener. We're always looking to grow these relationships. If you are listening to this show as a business owner and you'd like to reach the male demographic between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast, because 98% of the Locked On Broncos listenership is male. 80% of it between the ages of 18 to 44. Our rates are very reasonable. Feel free to reach out to us at LockedOnBroncos@gmail.com, and we can talk about it. Now, Luke, I want to talk about Trevor Siemian, though, specifically. Arguably had his worst night as a starting quarterback in Kansas City. He went 17 of 43, excuse me, obviously way below even 50% completion, 183 yards, an interception in garbage time, finished with a QB rating of 43.1, which is his worst of the season by a mile. The Broncos needed a big game from their young quarterback. They didn't get it. I want to get your take on it, Luke. Real quick, though, here's what Coop had to say about Simeon's performance on Monday.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, Mike, he didn't. I mean, that was obviously not one of his best outings. That's a great experience for him. I mean, that's as tough a place as there is in football to go play as a quarterback and handle your team. And even though he had been in there before and watched Peyton do it one year from the sidelines, it's a little bit different, you know, being that guy out there. So I think he'd be the first one to tell you he's got to play a hell of a lot better than he did, you know. But that's across the board. There's a lot of places we got to play a lot better than we did last night.
Now, Luke, Kubiak also went on to talk about Simeon's sprained foot injury setting him back and all that, but he didn't make any excuses for his young QB. I think what Siemian learned from Manning in 2015, from Peyton, served him very well as a first-time starter, Luke, but it wasn't enough. Talk about what you saw from Siemian in Kansas City.
Right. Well, this is the game that we were all expecting him to come out and, you know, play for his money's worth. I mean, we saw what he did against Kansas City last time. You know, you're expecting him, all right, he's going to come out and sling this around and make some plays happen. He didn't. You know, to be plain and simple, he didn't. He completed less than 40% of his passes, and he completely failed to generate any kind of offensive momentum whatsoever. I mean, I said it on the podcast yesterday. You know, Dontari Poe has more touchdown passes in the last two games than Trevor Siemian combined. I mean, like, if you hear something knocking at the door, let that sink in, because there's no reason that an NFL quarterback should have less touchdowns than Dontari Poe
over a two game period.
Right. I mean, and this is, you know, this is his first career touchdown pass, and he's still out. He's out dueling Trevor Siemian here. I mean, yeah, it's rough. I mean, it's rough to look at a kid like that and say, okay, we've seen development over the course of the year, but that's just not enough. And, you know, this is a tough situation for Kubiak to be in with the quarterback situation. And to be here right now, to me, honestly, what I've taken away from his rookie year is Trevor Siemian is not ready to be an NFL starter. I mean, he's developed some over the course of the year, but not as much as you can really gain from experience. I'm kind of stuck in this place right now where I'm starting to wonder if he's a ceiling like Matt Castle, who can come in, he can win you NFL games.
Right.
But is his ceiling as a consistent NFL starter? I am just not sure that it is at this point.
And I would agree.
Just because of his inconsistencies. He's so inconsistent.
I would agree. I think this is a guy who, you know, who knows, down through, as his career progresses, maybe he can turn into something more than what I believe he is, which at this point is a better than average backup quarterback who you'd really love to have on your team when the you know what hits the fan, your starter goes down, you need a stopgap to come in, keep your team on track for one, two, three games or whatever. That's Trevor Siemian. And that's not to put a cap on him. That's not to say that is the end-all be-all of Trevor Siemian, but at this stage the Broncos are no closer to finding that quarterback that's going to lead them on for the next 10 years or what have you than they were before this season started. And it kind of, you know, talking about evaluating quarterbacks, that's actually one of the last things I want to talk about before we get out of here. And it's something Kubiak said on Monday that I found very interesting. He was asked about the challenge of evaluating a quarterback like Trevor Siemian. And this is where things kind of become murky, because you're trying to evaluate Trevor Siemian while he's playing behind a very poor offensive line and without balance from a play-calling perspective. No run game, not even a semblance of a run game. Real quick, here's what Coop said about it.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think you can evaluate people. I mean, you're evaluating a lot of things. You know, obviously you got film, game, which you guys all see, but I'm seeing a guy every day. how he practices, how he prepares, how he does things. So there's a lot of things that go into evaluating guys, whether or not you think, you know, they can be a great player for years, you know, for many years and be consistent as a pro. So I think there's a lot more to it than just that, but obviously that carries a lot of weight.
Now, at the end of the day, Luke, you know, it's not how a quarterback practices or prepares, as important as those attributes are. I mean, obviously they are key. That's not what determines their fate. It's how he plays on Sunday, how he manages pressure. I mean, at the end of the day, what have you learned about Trevor Siemian, Luke, viewed through that scope of, you know, it's you're trying to evaluate this kid, as Kubiak talked about and was asked, through the lens of an offensive line in shambles and a no running game.
Yeah, well, I think, as I said, I think he can come in and be that hold the fort down guy, that Matt Cassel type. And, you know, we've seen Matt Cassel stay in the league for God knows how many years. You know, he's going to start an NFL game this Sunday for the Tennessee Titans.
Yep.
I mean, the man stays getting paychecks because he's going to come in and, you know, throw a couple touchdowns and just kind of hold the fort together and not let the team just self-destruct. And I, you know, there's no shame in that. I just think that right now that's all we've seen from Trevor Siemian. And it's, you know, there's just very, very little, there's very little going on from him that I'm like pounding the table for if I'm a quarterback coach. You know, I'm seeing him wait and anticipate the check down routes coming open. He's standing there waiting for the blitz for the running back or tight end to release so he can check it down. There's no downfield anticipation of players coming open. There's no reading of coverages. He's just trying to check it down and get to the next play. And, you know, you can pin some of that on the offensive line, too, that they're not giving him the time. But, you know, at a certain point as an NFL quarterback, you're going to have to step up in the pocket and take those shots downfield. That was my biggest critique of Manning last year, was that he would just feint and go. And, you know, at a certain point, you can't just curl into the fetal position and take the sack. You're going to have to step up and take a hit to deliver a ball downfield at some point. Trevor Siemian, he hasn't done that to me so far. And he has a lot to clean up before I can really see him as a consistent NFL starting quarterback. Because, you know, all year long, we've seen flashes of it, but nothing beyond anything that I'd consider consistent.
I would agree with you. You know, the season is over, but everything's going to be okay. You know, John Elway is still John Elway. This roster is still one of the most stacked in the league. They just couldn't find a way to get it done. Mostly it deals with coach, you know, you can lay that at the feet of coaching, offensive line, all on the offensive side of the ball. So they got a few things they got to tweak, and we're going to be breaking down how the Broncos can improve in 2017. So stay tuned for that, and I'm sure we're going to be talking a lot about the quarterback situation, Paxton Lynch, other options out there, whether it's free agency or the draft.
Dontari Poe.
There you go. That's the next target. Find a way to acquire Dontari Poe. But hey, that's all the time that we have for today's episode. Be sure, again, to follow at Locked On Broncos on Twitter. You can find Luke in the Twitterverse at Luke Polglaze, myself at Chad N. Jensen. We want to hear from you, so hit us up. Don't forget to check out some of the other killer podcasts on the network. This time of year, with the season in the books, basically, you're going to want to start tuning in to Locked On NFL Draft. Locked On NFL is great with Matt Williamson. So tune in, check those out. Don't forget to subscribe. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mile High Huddle. Huddle.